what would you say are some of your insights of how a well-structured business development center can really make a difference in a given dealership?
We're going to not only touch these internet leads and these phone leads and campaigns, like you said, but we're going to re-motivate customers that left the dealership. Maybe they left pissed off. Maybe they left because we couldn't reach to their number that they wanted. Whatever reason, we're calling either same day or next day to get these customers back into the dealership.
Hey everybody, welcome back to this episode of the Dealership Fix It podcast. And today we've got a very special guest where we're diving into the dynamic world of internet sales in the power sports and motorcycle dealership industry. So I want to welcome on Heather Deathridge, or you might call her Death Rage, which is super metal. But she's a digital sales expert, business partner, and just brings a ton of experience for the hands-on training for the digital sales teams. So welcome, Heather. Thanks for having us. Thanks for coming on.
Yes, I'm super excited to be on here today. A little bit about me. So I actually started a while back as a BDR rep. When I was in a centralized BDC, I worked for Right Now Power Sports, one of the biggest power sports companies in the nation, arguably. Now, with that, I was a BDR rep in the centralized BDC. From there, I got to really learn the fundamentals when it came to what internet sales was, what BDR follow-up was, and what that looked like, and how that really applied to the dealerships. Now, as I grew my skills and they decided to really push internet within all of the departments in each dealership, I actually got to go work for Right Now Chandler, which was the flagship store for Right Now Power Sports, probably their bigger or biggest retailer. Now, I got to hop into their internet team there, which was, I believe at the time, a group of six or seven. We worked together side by side. I got to kind of show them what I had learned working under the corporate management that I did work under. And from there, I got to continue to just excel my skills. I did move forward and jump into the corporate side, where I actually joined Jacob's team as a trainer. And as a trainer, I just kind of continued to move forward. I got to do everything from virtual trainings, live classes for larger groups. Once Right Now acquired about 13 locations a couple years back, we got to train all of their reps, including their GMs, their service advisors, etc., just to get everybody in the know of what digital sales is. Because believe it or not, digital sales really isn't too well known within all of the, not that it's not well known, but it's not really practiced in all of the dealerships like it is at Right Now.
Awesome. Awesome. So yes, obviously we need to break that down a little bit. So let me kind of go over that lineage.
Okay.
So when you started out as part of the centralized BDC, this was something that we were working on, right? Leadership had discussed, let's try something centralized, maybe take some of the pressure off of the stores, with a big group like Right Now, we were able to kind of have those resources. But how many years did you spend on the centralized BDC team there?
So when I was in the centralized BDC, I was there for just under a year before I hopped over to the dealership.
Okay. So just under a year, and I believe we had about 30 people on that team, right? And everybody was in charge of mostly the sales aspect of it for answering internet leads. Some of them were doing inbound phone calls, and of course the unsold traffic call, right?
Yes. So it ranged from unsold traffic. I don't, when I was there, I don't believe the inbounds were being handled there, but I know previously they definitely were.
Okay. So big group of people, big room, we kind of call it the nerve center, the appointment factory, right? A lot of activity happening, hundreds of calls per person per day, appointments being set for the stores that you're assigned on. Obviously you made your mark and were quite successful in that, right?
And it's funny because that was actually my first sales gig. I had never done sales prior to that. And so when I first hopped in there, obviously I was super nervous, didn't know quite what I was doing. I had some really good guidance under the management I was with. Obviously some of the scripting really helped me to push forward and be able to be successful.
Well, I think that's just a testament to how well the process works, right? So you just said that you're coming into this new thing. You're not really sure what it is. You were maybe attracted to the industry, with the motorcycles and the power sports or just kind of that business. And they gave you a process. They of course trained you on it, but all you had to do was follow the process and you were successful. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly how it went. They gave me a 3-month learning curve, a huge book of material to study and practice, and with some guidance from them, a bunch of different strategies that we would utilize during that time. I was able to be successful and just kind of work my way up to where I'm at today.
Awesome, awesome. So after that, you were selected to be a representative on the flagship store's internet sales team, which I think consisted of about 6 people at the time. And you were working there with a couple different roles, doing inbound phone calls, working the web leads, doing some campaign calls. Tell us a little bit about that experience at the store level now.
So jumping from that centralized BDC into the store level, I was extremely nervous trying to be face-to-face with those customers that I'm appointing, working well with the other departments, making sure that everything is like a well-oiled clock. But I started off when I jumped over there, I was doing some unsold traffic follow-up. And that, when it's not put in play every day in the dealership, that can create some combativeness between the departments, between sales and internet sales. So that was definitely a learning curve for everybody. But we were able to help bring their customers back in, and they were able to sell them vehicles. And so at the end of the day, it really worked out well. Now with that, with juggling unsold traffic calls, I was also taking inbound calls, utilizing the web leads as well. And all the time, utilizing my scripting. There was a brief time that I didn't use my scripting, probably about 3 months. It was right when I moved into the dealership, and I was like, what in the world? I'm not making money. I thought I would make more money going into the dealership. And so when I started to actually make a smaller paycheck or make less sales being in the dealership, I went to Daniela Volkovitz and I said, what am I doing wrong? And literally all she said was, are you using your scripts? I was like, no, I'm not using them. So I pulled them back out that day, started using them. And it was a total turnaround.
I remember that. I think you fell into what a lot of people fall into. And that's I've got an upgrade now. I'm pretty good at this. I made it. I don't need this material anymore. I've got it all up here, right? We know that those scripts more or less act as a guideline to kind of keep you on the path 100% of the time, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And now this is where you and I started working together. I had selected you to be part of my national training team for the kind of work that I was doing, right? We had a component of marketing, we had a component of inventory, and in the philosophy that I built, I needed a sales component to help with all those things on the back end, right? So we put you into a training role, and now you're exposed back to the whole entire, the whole entire company now, right? All stores.
Yeah.
So kind of take us through a little bit about what you learned about working with all the locations and kind of staying organized, the training path and some of the challenges you saw there working with all the locations.
So working with all the locations, I realized very quickly, everybody's doing their own thing. Everybody's got something different that they're doing. It's very hard to kind of wrangle that size group by yourself. And so having multiple key players in there to help keep everything uniform, to try to push this process forward and get everybody on board. You're working with a bunch of different personalities. That's a huge part in it. Now, as for the organization part, I'm a very organized person. So I would have notebooks with notes. I would have my CRMs open. I would be utilizing multiple desktops. But really, it just came down to making sure that there were key players within the dealership ready to hold these teams accountable for what they're training on, what they're learning, so that it's actually executed with the customers.
Makes a difference. Now, within this role, you had elevated to the internet manager for the national team, right? You had a couple people that you were able to bring under your wing. So Tell us a little bit about that. Now you're not so much doing the training yourself. You're kind of overseeing a group of individuals doing the training, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So once I became the national internet manager, I had a team of three under me. It's different. It's different training the trainers. You know, training a rep or training a salesperson is one thing because you know that process in and out, but getting somebody to be able to train these individuals and stay on top of them and make sure that the process is working and that their CRM is up to date. It's a totally different ball field, you know? So with that, I learned again, very quickly working with different personalities, you've got to be able to be a chameleon and you got to be able to figure out what works for their type of learning. Because everybody learns differently. Everybody's going to manage differently. And they did have a little bit of a managerial role working with these teams.
For a power sports dealer, there are a lot of moving parts that have a direct impact on your income. That's why Moto Hunt Premium was developed. Designed specifically for dealers, Moto Hunt Premium allows you to quickly and easily manage your inventory. With streamlined pricing data from competitive dealership listings, JD Power Pricing Guide, and National Power Sport Auction wholesale prices, Moto Hunt Premium also automatically identifies potential issues with your online listings to help you move your aging inventory and maximize your gross profits. Contact us today to take a test ride of the all-new Moto Hunt Premium and see how we can help your business grow and sell more inventory
today. Awesome. Yeah. So tell us what you're doing now.
So now I have actually partnered with Internet Sales Coaching and Jacob with yourself. So I'm back to training, which I absolutely love. I love to be a trainer. I get to go through the process. I get to teach fundamentals. I get to branch out to all of these new dealerships, kind of see where they're at when it comes to the digital world and what that looks like, because realistically, when it comes to digital sales, that's the new day and age. That's where we're at. And so I get to kind of do these secret shops. I get to do these secret shops with these dealerships, figure out where they're at and put together training programs and figure out what's going to work best for their training path.
Well, that's awesome. And so glad that you joined the team here. So, you know, now that you're in this new role, and even when you were with, you know, the previous company there, why do you think that internet sales has become so increasingly important in the power sports industry? I mean, what are the kind of key factors that you're able to communicate with principals or general managers and go, this is why internet sales is important, and these are some of the things of that we're seeing, you know, some of the ways that we're seeing that customers are now trying to do business with you?
Well, I think most customers, not I think, I know most customers are shopping online before they even reach out to a dealership. They're looking online, they're looking at multiple dealerships, whether they're Googling it or going to a specific dealership, they're online, they're on their phone or they're on their desktop. So we are in the digital age. And I think the fact that that kind of gets swept under the rug with dealerships is just mind blowing. So talking to these GMs and these different managers about digital sales, I think it's extremely important that we have somebody who is dedicated to making sure that they are responding to these internet leads right out of the gate. If they're holding off and they're waiting and they're not responding to these leads, that lead's going somewhere else. That's a potential customer. They don't take the opportunity to capture that customer. They've lost it. So I think really pushing the fact that knowing that every customer is shopping online before they shop at a dealership, I think that plays a huge part in whether or not they take internet seriously.
What do you think it is that in 2024 now that some dealerships, maybe they have a website, maybe they have a CRM, maybe they have someone that is responsible for the internet leads and or calls that are coming in asking for vehicle sales? But, you know, most of them don't have like a dedicated process, meaning like when this happens, we're going to do this. And when the customer wants this, we're going to say this, right? What do you think it is that still in this age, a lot of dealerships are out there just kind of like, you know, throwing some shit against the wall and seeing what sticks?
I mean, realistically, I think sales has been around for a long time. Digital sales hasn't. There's no turnkey, this is what works, this is what's going to happen, this is going to get every lead. And realistically, the customer that's in front of them, that's in their face, they could possibly make money off of. Not to say that they can't with the dealership, but I think that's kind of the mindset. Everybody knows the sales process, right? Step 10, the 10 steps, what to do when a customer comes in and is in their face. Not everybody knows how to handle a customer over the phone. And so making sure that they are either getting the training or that they are trying to figure out a process or they're working with say internet sales coaching, for example, to try to hone in on what to do on that phone to capture that lead to get them to the dealership so they can go through those 10 steps. They've got to be able to do that and be willing to do that.
Makes sense. Makes sense. As you know, in the different roles that you've had, and even now, you know, you're kind of looking at a broad range of different dealerships, you know, whether it be a Harley only or a big multi-line store, a small, you know, store with only a couple lines or a little bit of inventory, short staff, big staff. I mean, out of all those different experiences that you've had, what do you see as kind of some of the most common challenges when you observe the power sports dealerships that you work with?
Some of the most common challenges I see is going to be the departments working together. I think without a doubt, no matter what dealership you go to, everybody working together is far and few in between. And what I mean by that is let's say that we have our internet department within that dealership. Internet department talks to the customer, brings the customer in. Well, are they supposed to close that deal themselves? Or do they stay on the phone and pass that customer off to a sales guy? If they pass that customer off to a sales guy, who's getting paid on that deal? So it's really just about having a process that ties everybody in together so that internet rep can not only capture that lead and bring that lead in, but they can continue to also sell other parts of the dealership.
I hear that a lot too, the synergy between departments, not only internet sales to the floor sales or traditional sales departments, but also, you know, sales to parts or parts to service or service to sales, right? It does seem that there is a little bit of a barrier between some of these departments, either because of personalities or just their job roles. But, you know, I to push back on you a little bit, I have seen some dealerships really put forth a great effort to create some of that synergy, but you're right. And most of them, yeah, it's just like, hey, that's the sales guys. They do what they do. Those are the internet sales team. They bring in the appointments for us to sell. And, you know, yeah, it's kind of a mixed bag, if you will. Mm-hmm. So BDC is a hot topic, right? Business development centers. And the way that we always kind of looked at these was, well, a BDC and an internet sales department is somewhat one and the same. You know, you can have a different department or have almost kind of like a hybrid function. But, you know, some dealerships are putting forth the effort to have multiple teams with multiple functions. And this can even include not only major unit vehicle sales, but also service appointments or maybe some help with the parts, you know, special orders or stuff like that, calling customers, letting them know that their parts are in. I mean, what would you say are some of your insights of how a well-structured business development center can really make a difference in a given dealership?
I mean, I'll kind of combat that with a question. How many sales guys want to follow up with their leads after they leave the dealership?
That's so always I think the question,
we,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. So if we have a BDC department that is structured properly and they're doing the follow up properly, we're going to not only touch these internet leads and these phone leads and campaigns, like you said, but we're going to re-motivate customers that left the dealership. Maybe they left pissed off. Maybe they left because we couldn't reach to their number that they wanted. Whatever reason, we're calling either same day or next day to get these customers back into the dealership. And that doesn't happen with most sales guys. Not all sales guys. I think some sales guys absolutely follow up, but that's far and few in between. So if we have somebody dedicated to do that, we are not only re-motivating customers into the dealership, but that's more sales that are happening, right? That's that second swing for that sales guy to try to close up that deal.
What do you think it is? I mean, this has been kind of a thing for a while, right? Is that we have some of these departments that are extensions of our main department because some of the team members within that own department don't do X, right? Like mm-hmm. the follow-up thing. So why couldn't I, if, you know, let's say I'm a general manager listening to this and I go, well, my guys are following up just fine, right? They make all their calls and I go and check the reports. Yeah, they're clicking through the CRM here. You know, they may be saying the right or the wrong things, but I mean, what would convince a general manager to maybe take another look at a BDC if they already think that their sales guys are making these calls?
It's not just about making the calls, you know, it's when you have a customer, let's use an example, right? If we have a customer who left angry, do you think they're going to want to talk to that same sales guy that they're pissed off at? Probably not. A pretty good trend of BDC departments, you'll see softer spoken, maybe, you know, maybe more enthusiastic voices over the phone. You see a lot of women in these departments. And so something that was huge for me, I utilize that. I'm a woman calling an angry customer. I'm going to defuse the situation. Tell them, don't worry, you don't got to work with that sales guy if that's what's bothering you. Or, you know, we're going to do our best to make sure that you leave happy, whatever the case may be. I am going to utilize my opportunity to defuse the situation, remotivate the customer, bring them back in. And that doesn't come, overnight. You're not going to call a customer and just know what to say to defuse the situation or know how to overcome a price objection. It comes with practice, and our sales guys, they don't have time to practice that. They have time to practice their sales process and how to, you know, do the sit down, how to do a write up, how to do the presentation, so on and so forth. They don't have time to do both.
That makes sense. Yeah. It's kind of like having your own skill set for the job function, right? The in-person sales versus the online sales, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Makes a lot of sense. Okay. Well, talking about that process for internet sales, I mean, what do you train as far as a fundamental component of the internet sales process, and maybe how does that differ from the traditional on showroom floor sales process?
So let's take the on showroom floor sales process versus the internet. Let's say that customer comes in, they leave, they have about a 3-day follow-up, right? They're going to get a call, text, and email on the first day, and then probably call the next day and call on the third day. It differs sometimes, but that's typically what we see actually being executed with these customers. Now let's take internet customers. They have not reached our dealership yet. They have no commitment to us yet. So we actually put in play a 21-day follow-up to try to, one, get engagement with a customer, but two, really capture this customer, get them to commit to our dealership and get an appointment out of them. End goal is to bring that customer in. So some of the fundamentals that we go through with training is going to be our 21-day follow-up, which includes phone, text, and email outreach. It's going to include what we like to call the appointment funnel. You know, we ask questions in a very specific way to keep our customers corralled to go towards that appointment day and time. We also utilize objections and how to overcome them, power phrases. You know, we can tell a customer to come into our dealership all day, but if it doesn't sound like it's in the benefit of the customer, they're not going to come in. So there's a lot of different fundamental pieces that kind of overlap each other that we like to go through and focus on to help with shaping this process and getting these reps ready for the phones.
I like that. Yeah. I think that goes back on the specific skill set for the job, right? So, you know, if I'm hearing you correctly, the internet sales position is not about selling the vehicle, even though that's what the customer called in about, right? Hey, I saw that you got this online, or I'm looking for one of these. The internet sales position is really to sell the visit and set the appointment, right? To do what they want is to see the vehicle and maybe explore some different options.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Because if we start selling the vehicle over the phone, what happens? We start to drop in our profitability. So we start to negotiate the vehicle over the phone like the customer wants, right? Let's say we take an inbound customer. They're calling our dealership. Their internal dialogue is, I'm going to see if it's available. I'm going to see what the best price is out the door. So we have to stop that. We have to stop them from trying to get that best price out the door and sell why it's going to benefit them to be here in our dealership. That way we can hold on, one, to the profitability, but two, we can actually get the commitment that customer might actually be serious and that they're going to come in and they're going to work towards a deal.
Makes sense. Now, while we're talking about that same dealership, that's looking at the different marketplaces that are out there, right? So they're on CycleTrader, they're on Moto Hunt, they're on dealers' websites in their area. And they're looking around and they see, you know, Polaris Razor or Yamaha, you know, motorcycle, whatever. And they easily shop, 3, 4, 5 different dealerships for the same bike or probably a competitive, alternative to that, right? What is one way that dealers can make themselves, I guess, stand out from this crowded marketplace of saturated dealers in these big, you know, metro marketplaces?
I mean, if we're talking about their website, let's first talk about inventory, making sure we've got live photos up. If we have inventory on the website, maybe have a 360 video, really make yourself stand out. I think it's super important that with that inventory, because everybody's looking at the same pictures, but if your pictures stand out and they differ, maybe they look more professional, maybe they have a nice logo in there. That's going to be embedded in their memory a little bit more. They're going to be a little bit excited when they click on that picture. And then as for standing out, like as an individual, let's say I'm an internet rep and I want to stand out, how I approach the customer is going to really make or break whether or not I can capture that lead. And what I mean by that is, let's say we're calling dealerships. 9 times out of 10, you're going to hear, hey, thank you for calling this dealership. This is Heather. How can I help you? It's very boring. It doesn't stand out. So having a super excited greet, hey, this is Heather at Ride Now Power Sports. How can I make your day better? Something like that, something to really stand out. I'm sure you've heard a couple of them, right? Okay. So something to stand out right off out of the gate, that's going to capture your customer's attention a little bit more. Email templates, right? If we haven't actually talked to this customer and they just submitted an internet lead, email templates, making sure they're custom, making sure that they're pleasant to look at, right? I don't want to look at a blob of a paragraph that says, hey, this is Heather, X, Y, and Z, ABC. I want to look at something that maybe has a picture of the vehicle I'm interested in. Maybe it's got something bolded saying, I want to get you out riding. So making sure that we are standing out in a way that is going to excite that customer, because when it comes to these customers, it's all about excitement. If we're not selling fun, we're not selling to that customer.
Makes a lot of sense. How do you feel about putting some additional alternative vehicles in there, right? So if they're looking at a Razor, maybe you're also a Can-Am dealer or a Kawasaki dealer, and you can suggest a T-Rex or, you know, a Maverick, something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. There are so many different benefits to offering an alternative vehicle. One, it's going to maybe open your customer's eyes to something that they weren't in the know about. Maybe they didn't know that vehicle existed. Maybe it's going to be more budget friendly. Maybe it's going to have an accessory that they really wanted already on it. But two, when it comes down to time to do the deal, let's say they can't get approved on one of those vehicles. Let's say that maybe they can only get approved on the Polaris, but they can't get approved on the Can-Am, but you never offer the Polaris. You know, there's some different options and different
segments, options, yeah, models.
Yeah. Okay. So there's definitely some different benefits to offering other vehicles.
Okay. And, you know, like at a Harley dealer, I see this often, and we train this in our materials, is offering a used, right? So if they're looking at a new Street Glide, right? We probably have a few pre-owned models, to your point, something a little less expensive. Maybe it's a little cheaper on the payments or less money down, better financing terms, who knows, right? But we're always offering different alternatives so that we can kind of offer a range of different models or different, new, used, whatever, right?
Mm-hmm. That's just so that we exhaust every possible avenue to try to get this customer on a vehicle.
So that's also part of the problem in our industry too, is right? It's niche, but yet broad. Right. So mm-hmm. I don't need to explain anybody to listen to this, but we sell ATVs and side-by-sides and on-road motorcycles, off-road motorcycles. Some dealers have personal boats. Watercraft. Mm-hmm. Some dealers have marine, right? So let's say you're an internet sales rep and you take one call, a guy wants a used Harley, and the next call, a guy wants a brand new Polaris. And then the next call, someone's talking about a Sea-Doo, right? So, mm-hmm. How do we tailor the training with all the different products and all the different niches that we have? Is it specific to everything, or do we kind of just keep it core and centralized to what the customer's trying to do?
So it's definitely going to be more core and centralized, because the idea behind making it specific to each model. What if we let's just take an example? What if we don't have that model? Is that the end of the conversation? Do we no longer try to get this customer into our dealership? Do we no longer try to sell them anything? Absolutely not. Making sure that we are utilizing, we have different word tracks to open these customers up to other options. One of them is, great, are you only looking at new, or would you consider pre-owned as well? Another one is, what colors were you interested in? So maybe if we don't have this color, we've got this color that they might consider. But making sure that we're offering and trying to open this customer up to multiple options is going to give us the best foot forward to try to close them up on the vehicle. If we just take every phone call, oh, we don't have it, or oh, we have it, but this is the price. You don't like the price? Okay, bye. You know, we're really, really missing out on customers.
Totally. And I see that so often, right? It's like, mm-hmm. they only want this one thing because that's what's on their web lead, or that's what they called in about, and we don't have it. All right, well, the best I can do is put you on a wait list rather than trying to offer an alternative to that dealer or to that customer from that mm-hmm. dealership. That's crazy. Okay.
And just to piggyback off of that, a lot of the technique of doing that is in the order you do it. So if you want to open a customer up, you got to do it before you introduce the negativity. And what I mean by that is if you know, you just said, oh, they want this, but I don't have it, I'm going to put them on a wait list. A lot of the times what you'll hear is a rep say, oh, well, we don't have it, but I have this. And so what they did is they just introduced negativity first and then offered an alternative vehicle. They got to switch that around. Swapping that around will make a huge difference in how their customers react to them not having that vehicle.
Sometimes it's not necessarily what you say, it's how you say it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, good point. Okay. So let's talk about retention, right? So up to this point, we've been talking mostly about the new incoming leads and kind of what to do, right? So let's just fast forward through that process. Customer, you know, set the appointment with us. They came in, maybe a handshake happens, and you pass them along to a fit specialist or showroom specialist or product specialist, whatever you want to call them in your dealership. And they're going to show the customer around. They're going to walk the customer through the buying process. And hopefully, bam, we got a sale out of that. Now let's talk about retention, right? Because I don't think it's as important to a lot of dealers, or there's not enough emphasis on it. But what is some way in your teachings that you can keep really the customer top of mind after the sale and maybe provide some strategies to these dealerships on how they can keep their customers coming back for service and parts and their next vehicle?
Yeah, absolutely. So making sure that and before the sale even happens, making sure your reps are selling other parts of their dealership. I think that is so, so very important. That ties back into everybody working kumbaya together. So making sure that they are emphasizing that we have a wonderful parts department. They're going to set you up with X, Y, and Z. By the way, I want you to come talk to my service manager. He's going to set you up with a great package or get you ready for your first oil change, whatever the case may be, selling other parts of the dealership before the sale even happens. Now, after that, having a solid follow-up process. You know, back when I worked with Right Now, we had a 3-year follow-up process that we implemented in some of the stores. And that starts with month one. Are you ready for are you enjoying your vehicle? You know, have you gotten to take it out? How is it doing? How is it riding? Plus a phone call. And then it kind of just goes on from there. You'll see parts and accessory emails go out. You'll see trade emails go out around that 2-year mark, right? When they hit their time to trade in, you'll see a trade email go out. So making sure that you have a solid follow-up process. But I think retention really starts well before the sale. If I'm speaking candidly, I think it starts well before the sale, making sure that you build. I like to tell my reps, you're building a lifetime customer, not a one-time customer. And so making sure that you are building that rapport, you're getting that quote unquote friendship with that customer, and then having a solid follow-up plan afterwards.
That's great. So you rely heavily on the CRM and some of the workflow functions that are kind of pre-programmed into it for some of these follow-ups, right? So that you can remind the rep, whoever it's assigned to, that, hey, that 2-year mark is coming up, right? It's time to schedule that phone call.
Yeah, absolutely. I know there's also, you know, like birthday calls or birthday emails just to try to keep that friendliness. But yeah, utilizing the CRM maybe preset that follow-up is going to make a huge difference in customer retention.
Definitely keeps you organized, right?
Yeah, without a doubt.
Okay. So kind of talk about CRMs and websites and everything, you know, internet sales based. It's always evolving, right? These digital trends are evolving, not so much because we make them that way, but we're kind of following the trends of what the customer expects when they want to do business with dealerships, right? Mm-hmm. So in terms of that, I mean, how in this evolving environment, how do you stay kind of ahead of the curve and ensure that the training and some of the strategies that we use are still effective for the long term?
Well, I mean, I think that's just going to come down to the data. That's going to come down to the numbers of what these customers are doing. You know, you look into let's take COVID, for example, right? What was everybody doing? Everybody right before COVID was selling their vehicles for little to no profit. COVID hit, profit goes through the roof. And then slowly it dwindles back down to a more steady pace. Now, the only way we're going to be able to keep up with those trends, though, is seeing what they are by utilizing different features. Like, for instance, I know you use Google Analytics. Is that one of your big focuses that you use when you're looking at the data?
For website traffic, yeah. But I guess more traffic. Or less in the sales process, right? So when you've got the lead and you're looking at your appointment sets to shows to sales, I mean, how can you tell in the data that, you know, this is an effective strategy, it's working, or hey, it's not working, we need to kind of tweak it a little bit?
Well, I know that there is a 5x50 rule that we definitely like to use and utilize. It's going to tie into some of the best practices. But, you know, for just to give you a quick breakdown, it starts with the phone call. Out of that, out of the phone calls, you should contact about 50% from that, about 50% set, 50% show, 50% sell. Now, once we start to fall off of that, once we start to fall off of the trend of hitting 50%, we can utilize the 5x50 rule to really see where they're falling off at. So for instance, if you're setting a bunch of appointments, but far and few are coming in between, that means somewhere in the communication, there's something lost. So we need to maybe listen into phone calls, do some digging into their leads to see what's happening during these conversations to get to the appointment. Maybe the customer's just saying yes to get them off of the phone. And they're not actually showing. So that's just one example, but really paying attention to what the numbers are within the dealership is going to help us figure out how to customize training paths for these teams.
Yeah, that's not a one size fits all, right? Because it's different parts of the country, the different brands that they sell, the different customers wanting those brands, and just the individual that you're training might be different from the counterpart sitting next to them, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, cool. Why, by the way, is the 5x50 a 50%? Why do we do that? I mean, I get that question a lot, right? When we put this document, we say, well, you should be about a 50% baseline. What is the reasoning behind that?
I always like to combat that with a question. How many leads do you get versus how many walk-ins do you get? You're going to get a lot more leads and a lot more inbound phone calls. Plus you're touching these walk-in customers.
If you're a motorcycle and power sports dealer, you already know the biggest marketplace websites are clunky, slow, and riddled with ads. Even if you pay big bucks to list your inventory, your competitors can pay even more to outrank you. That's why we created MotoHunt. Our site is famously streamlined and quick, with no extra nonsense to confuse buyers or dealers. That's why we rank so high in search results without having to spend millions in advertising. Why pay three times as much? At MotoHunt, one low price covers everything a dealer needs to get their inventory listed and collecting leads fast, with no multi-level pricing tiers and no way for your competition to out-premium you. No matter how many listings or leads you generate, your subscription price is the same. Click the link to find out how MotoHunt can help you start generating more leads today.
Well, Heather, you've answered all my questions, and we're certainly happy to have you on the Internet Sales Coaching team and really trying to provide a lot of value out there for the dealers, you know, just kind of inspecting the process, maybe providing some suggestions on how they can make it just a little bit better and close more deals or at least appoint some more customers to their showroom. But what kind of advice would you give to a lot of the power sports and motorcycle dealerships? Listen to this, right? Managers, staff, maybe there's some BDC reps, maybe there's some salespeople. I mean, if they're just looking to overall improve their internet sales performance, what kind of things would you say you can start right now to help them?
I would say, first and foremost, get a repeatable process that you know works. If you know it works, it's going to be something that you can utilize day in and day out. You can use it with every single customer that you touch. And focus on appointments. Don't focus on doing deals over the phone. Get a process that works, a repeatable process that works, and focus on bringing those customers, those internet customers, phone up customers into the dealership rather than working those deals over the phone.
I think that was a wise answer. And, you know, I think that that's actually a quote, right? If you can't, the quote is something like this, and I'm butchering it, but if you can't explain what you're doing, it's not a process, right? So yeah, I think you're right. A lot of these dealers, they'll just answer the phone or type back a quick email, you know, to some of these inquiries that are happening, and then they just kind of let it all fall by the wayside, right? Yeah. They don't really have a what's next action plan in place. Yeah. Any other advice that you can give to dealerships? I mean, draw from that experience, Heather, give me some gold here. I mean, we've got dealerships listening to this and they're like, man, I just wish I was listening to a podcast where someone said this and I can go put it into action today.
If you guys aren't using an appointment funnel, use an appointment funnel. I said focus on appointments, but realistically, I think if there's any takeaway from any type of training, because a lot of times sometimes there's no takeaway, but utilize an appointment funnel. I would say utilize an appointment funnel and just focus hard on appointments. That's going to be my bread and butter. Focus on appointments.
Okay, so let's break that down. I love that you said the appointment funnel, because the reason why we train an appointment funnel is more or less because the question that they always ask the customer is what?
When do you want to come in?
When do you want to come in? God, I hate that question.
I don't want to. Yeah.
I always kind of looked at it from, if you give the customer a question that has the opportunity for them to say no, they're always going to answer no, because always. No is very easy to say, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So
like, hey, can you come in today or this weekend? No, right? So you know, when can you come in? No, or never, I guess.
Yeah, would be let great, me check right? my schedule.
So what exactly is the appointment funnel, and help us break that down so we understand what that is?
So without a visual aid, the appointment funnel, it is quite literally a funnel, right? It starts very broad. And what it does is it breaks down into sections to get us to a specific day and time. So what this does is this makes it easier to get to a day and time, and you're going to utilize asking close-ended questions. And we focus hard on that with our training, close-ended questions, especially for the appointment funnel. Now, Jacob, if you don't mind doing it.
What is a closed-ended question first?
Okay, perfect. That's what I was gonna do. If you don't mind doing an example with me. So for instance, I'm gonna do an open-ended question first. Okay. So Jacob, what do you want for lunch today?
I don't know.
Yeah, me either. That was an open-ended question, right? So that's a very broad question. Psychologically, your customer is going to start thinking, I don't know, do I want Mexican food? Do I want Chinese food? What's open right now? What's close by? It's just too hard to answer. Just like if you're talking to your significant other and you ask them, hey, what are we having for dinner tonight? I don't know. It's just too hard to answer. So if we make it a little bit easier, we give them two options, option A or option B, it's going to be a little bit easier for them to answer. So if you don't mind, I'm going to utilize you again. Jacob, what do you want for lunch today? Do you want Chinese food or Mexican food?
Mexican food actually sounds pretty good.
It really does. Okay. So that right there, utilizing that close-ended question, I was able to get you to pick one. So you feel like you're in control because you're picking, but realistically, I'm giving you two options and corralling you towards that time. So if we use it in an appointment funnel, instead of using food, I'm going to use days. So Jacob, when do you want to come in, today or tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Perfect. Now from there, I'm going to keep moving down until I get to that specific day or time. Okay. So I'm not going to stop with tomorrow and just say, okay, great. Come in and ask for me. I want to get a specific time. I want that commitment from my customer, so they feel obligated to come in. So you want to come in tomorrow? Wonderful. Are you more of a morning person or an afternoon person?
I would say the afternoon.
The afternoon. Wonderful. So I do have some time between 12, 1 o'clock, or closer to 2 or 3.
Okay. Let's do 12 o'clock.
12 o'clock. You got it. Now I have a 12:15 or a 12:45.
Okay. So you give me two very specific times, but they're both in 15:45. Why do you do that?
So just like utilizing this for a specific reason, we utilize the quarter hours, the quarter of the hours, because it's going to one, be more memorable. But two, it's going to really, really make that customer feel like they are penciled in at a specific time to work with you. And therefore they're going to feel obligated to follow through. Just like with a doctor's office. If you notice, they no longer do 12 or 12:30, they actually do 12:15 or 12:45. And if they give you a 12:30, they tell you check-in time is at 12:15. This is because it is more memorable. You're less likely to miss your appointment.
I love that. Okay. So closed-ended questions with the appointment funnel, today or tomorrow, morning or afternoon, around 12, 1, 2, somewhere around there. Okay, 12:15 or 12:45. Boom. Now let's say the customer, I'll be the customer again. Okay, yeah, let's do 12:45. What is the next step after that?
After that, you have to sell yourself in writing. Now this, I get a lot of pushback on this. I like to call it a data technique, but we still use it because it works. A lot of what we do in sales ties into psychology. And so making sure that we are taking these extra measures and extra steps to make ourselves memorable is going to change how obligated that customer feels to come in. So selling yourself in writing is a simple, simple technique where you have your customer write down your information. Yes, you can have them text it to you, or I'm sorry, yes, you can text it to them. However, them not going through the motions of writing it down, they're not going to remember it as much as they would if they were to go through the steps of writing it down. Not to mention what happens after a text message after a few days. Let's say I sent you a text message, it's from a number you don't know, it ends up at the bottom, right? So going through the steps to sell yourself in writing. Can I role play this with you, Jacob?
Let's go. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. So wonderful, Jacob. I have you in here for 12:45. Now, do you have a pen and paper handy? If not, I can wait.
Yeah, I got one right here.
Okay, wonderful. So write this down. My name is Heather. Okay. My phone number is 1234567. Now remember, I am at the Chandler location right off of this street and that street. Now, when you get here, you're going to either ask for myself, Heather, or my manager, Jacob, and we will be ready to take care of you. Okay. Did you get all that down?
I got it.
Okay, perfect. Then I'll see you then. So if you notice, I don't know if you caught it, but I said, do you have a pen and paper handy? If not, I can wait. Mm-hmm. Did you catch the implied command? So, so obviously, you know, we use that, right? We utilize the implied command rather than saying, hey, do you have a pen and paper handy? If not, that's okay. Or, hey, do you have a pen and paper handy? We like to say, do you have a pen and paper handy? If not, I can wait, because that insinuates that we're already waiting on them. Yeah. So human nature, they're going to start hustling to try to find that pen and paper. And so, yes, it's a data technique. However, it works. It works for multiple different reasons.
I agree. And you explained that beautifully. Yeah. The handwritten note to self, mm-hmm. Is much more memorable, and it's now a tangible thing, right? Just like you said, it's a lot of psychology. And so, you know, what we teach is that, hey, we're trying to get the technique down to where we can, in a short amount of time, sell the visit and commit them to a time, but it's all been verbal and audible up to this point, right? When you put a sticky note that they have on their side of the phone call in their hands that they can hold, and it says your name with the appointment time, it very much concretes that appointment even, mm-hmm. even harder, right? It gets it a little bit more stickier. Okay.
And I hate to say it, but it really makes them feel obligated. Like, that's an ugly word to say, but realistically, they, just like if you were to, you know, tell your mom, hey, I'll come over and mow your lawn for you, at 2:15 tomorrow, even though you don't want to do it, you now feel obligated to do it. Right. So just like that, our customers feel obligated, whether they want to or not, they feel obligated to come in, or at least let you know that they won't.
I think buying a new motorcycle or power sport is a little bit funner than mowing mom's lawn, right?
A little bit more. Yeah. A little bit.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you for that. Hopefully everybody listening kind of got that. And just in case they didn't, Heather, how can people get a hold of you?
So you can actually reach me by email. You can reach me at heather@internetsalescoaching.com. If you want to go to the website, internetsalescoaching.com, and submit some information just to get some feedback from me. We also have a lot of material on there that you can utilize. But if not, you can also either shoot me a call or a text at 602-975-5463.
All right. Cool. Well, Heather, I appreciate you coming on. Certainly a lot of experience within the internet sales, power sports, and motorcycle dealership vertical. And so we always love having people on that are subject matter experts such as yourself and provide some value to the dealerships listening. And so everybody that caught this episode, thank you so much for listening. Make sure to like, subscribe, and share with anybody that you think might find this episode valuable. Check us out on Spotify, on Apple, on YouTube, or wherever you like to consume your info. And we appreciate you coming on, Heather, and goodbye.
Goodbye.